Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good Friday afternoon to everyone. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith today. We have just an exciting show in store for you. We're going to talk about the Bible. We're going to talk about Christian worldview. We're going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about polls, things that seem to be kind of top of mind for a lot of people today and will be for the next 30 days or so. But also top of mind is this very large storm that's bearing down on Florida, the Carolinas, and Georgia that seems to be moving very slowly, but moving in that direction.
It is. Thankfully, it did miss sections of like southern Florida, Miami, and just a little bit north of there. I mean, it still had the ramifications of it, but the main part, it kind of skirted that. And of course, we're praying for Haiti that was devastated again by it, and ministries like Feed My Starving Children that are on the ground there, another one I know of called Praying Pelican, others, ministry organizations that are actually there right now, really waiting for floodwaters to recede, but helping in any way they can. So, you know, pray about if you want to support those ministries that are there, boots on the ground, helping restore Haiti right now.
Mm-hmm. And for the people who've been affected, the death toll continues to rise there. And of course, praying for those who are preparing for the hurricane to make landfall in their areas as well. So just a devastating storm, and just please be in prayer for all those who are affected and all of those who might be able to help as well. Well, you know, we have a lot to talk about in our show, and we're going to talk a bit about cultural trends and what they mean not only to this election season, but also what they mean for America. We have another cultural trend that John Stone Street is discussing as well. Listen in.
Too many act as if this satire is true. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Babylon Bee, the new satire site started by Christian cartoonist Adam Ford, has had a lot of great articles, but one piece last week may have really stung some readers. Incognito mode now safely hides internet activity from God, said the headline. Now, for those who don't know, incognito mode allows users of Google's Chrome web browser to conceal the sites that they visited. The browser's upgraded incognito mode, said the fictional article, is so well encrypted, not even God can see what you're looking at on the internet. Now, we may laugh, but the joke's on everyone who thinks they're viewing pornography in secret, forgetting what the psalmist said about God. Where shall I go from your spirit? Where shall I flee from your presence? If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day. Nothing is hidden from God, but thank God he forgives what Chrome can't hide. With today's point, I'm John Stone Street.
Well, thanks so much for that wisdom from John Stone Street. We are in a digital age, certainly, and unless you've been living without access to any media, newspaper, TV, social media, radio, well, then you know that we as a nation are fully engaged in this political season with our chance to elect a new president in about 1 month's time. So why is this election so important for America? You've probably heard that on the news and maybe are thinking that yourself. And what are the issues that are trending in our nation today that are making this election so important? And do we as Christians have a responsibility to participate in this political process? What do you think? Perhaps you wonder, like I do, how reliable are all of those polls that we seem to be getting data from day after day? Well, we're going to get answers to these questions and much more today as we talk with award-winning author George Barna, founder of the Barna Group, a research firm that specializes in faith-related surveys and statistical analysis. His book, America at the Crossroads, gives us the explosive trends that are shaping America's future, and he tells us what we can do about it. George Barna currently leads the American Culture and Faith Institute, which studies and influences faith and politics, as well as MetaFormation, which is an organization designed to help people maximize their potential. George has led several churches and currently lives with his family on the Central California coast. Welcome, George Barna.
Joe, it's great to be with you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I was just talking to George right before the show and said this book is incredibly timely. And everything that I was reading just made me say, oh, this is happening. This is happening right now. The atmosphere of virtually every gathering space, whether it's a coffee shop or the proverbial water cooler, is talking about this election and what is going on. And what is it that led you to say we are at a crossroads that's not only affecting this election, but affecting so many facets of American living? What led you to that?
Well, Joe, I've been studying our culture and what's going on in our society for more than 30 years. And I'll tell you, as a sociologist and kind of a cultural analyst, one of the things that's unusual is to find a point in time where you have the convergence of so many critical decisions that need to be made that will determine the direction of our nation for probably the better of 30 to 40 years. We're in one of those moments right now where there are critical decisions that collectively we're going to have to make about the nature of relationships, our economy, the family, politics and government, culture itself, the church and faith, education, morality. All of those dimensions are ones where people are asking real baseline questions to figure out who do we want ourselves and our nation to be, what direction do we want ourselves and the country to move in, and the answers to that question is really you're going to shape things for quite a while to come. So it really is a critical crossroads.
Well, you mentioned in your book, America at the Crossroads, that this political environment is particularly charged because the satisfaction of government is at an all-time low. You wrote that 62% of people are saying that they're frustrated with our federal government and 19% saying they are downright angry. Speak to that, if you will.
Yeah, it's a period of time where partly we feel these things because we've thrown out a lot of the fundamental precepts about truth, about righteousness, about value and values. All of these kinds of things are being redecided and rediscovered by Americans. And so when we look at our political system, we want it to help us to make some of those decisions. But instead, what people are seeing is tremendous inefficiency, widespread corruption, real confusion, the inability for our leaders to work together, all kinds of things that are causing us to say, you know what, we no longer believe that the government is working for us. We believe that essentially the people in it have sold out and they're working for special interests. And so we're kind of left on our own here to fend for ourselves. It's no wonder that we're feeling angry, we're feeling disconnected, we're feeling completely abandoned by the political system that we elect and that we're counting on to serve our best interests.
Well, and it seems there's just so much division right now. In fact, I'm going to read a quote just from your book that summed it up so nicely. It says, "The country is now stuck in the midst of political gridlock, animosity and chaos, essentially divided between those who want less government intrusion and control and those who are willing to accept more government dominion and less personal freedom as long as they're personally and holistically taken care of by the government." Why does it seem like we are so incredibly polarized right now, George?
Well, I think there are two issues that we have to focus on. One is the leadership issue. And really, the primary thing that great leaders do is they communicate a vision for the future that people share, people embrace together. And that's what coalesces us. It brings us together to work toward an outcome that we all agree is what we want. And to get there, leaders have to build the case. They have to involve us in that process. We haven't had that kind of leadership in a couple of decades. And so we're floundering about, and we've become a much more selfish group of people. And that relates to the second issue, which has to do with worldview. We're a nation now where, by and large, our dominant worldview is postmodernism, which is about experiences and relationships and emotions and feelings. And, you know, that's all well and good. But essentially, again, what it does is it drives us apart from each other and says that each of us is the only one who can know what truth is or righteousness or value for our own lives. We no longer have any kind of a shared sense of who we are. So you put those things together, the absence of strong visionary leadership and the reduction of our worldview into independence and hyper-tolerance and selfishness, and this is the kind of nation that you get.
So in order to buck this trend and create a more unified country, this isn't something that's going to be able to happen overnight, no matter who is elected, or even if we change all of those elected to the Senate and to Congress as well. It would be a very long process, would it not?
It will. And frankly, none of the candidates that are running for president this year are the kind of candidates that are likely to bring us together and have that kind of shared vision, because neither of them really has a vision that is really enthusing the public. So, yeah, it's going to take getting that kind of leadership, and not just one leader, but, I mean, having it all throughout government, having it in families, having it in our main cultural institutions, which also we've been losing confidence and trust in. We've got to rebuild all that. But then it's also going to take time. It's going to take a lot of time and a lot of conversation, a lot of dialogue for Americans to reconsider some of the seminal ideas on which you build a culture, for us to come together around that, and then to start to restructure our society so that it conforms to that common vision that we might embrace.
It's almost as if this dissatisfaction that you've been talking about has caused a decrease in any sort of political engagement. People are throwing their hands up even to say, I'm not even going to vote. I don't even want to participate. That the disgust runs that deep for some. And then for others, it's completely the opposite. But there has been a decrease in engagement, even those who are voting, right?
Well, there is. And, you know, I think one of the areas that I find really disturbing is if you look, for instance, at born-again Christians across the country. What we know is that in the last presidential election, 38 million born-again Christians in America didn't bother to vote. You know, we had 26 million of them who were registered to vote, didn't bother to show up. We had another 12 million born-again adults who didn't even bother to register. 38 million, keep in mind that the election was won by President Obama by less than 5 million votes. So if even a small portion of just that born-again segment had shown up to vote, the outcome might have been radically different, and the course of American history would probably have been considerably different. So, yeah, you see all kinds of people in our culture these days, because of this disenchantment with government, because of their anime over the sense of what culture has to offer to them and what they're going to have to do for themselves, they really have disengaged from the process, which just makes things worse. And again, underscores the importance of having leaders who not only understand that, but who are committed to bringing people back into the process. We're an unusual nation on the face of the earth because we're a democratic republic. And that only works when the people participate. When large numbers of the people, when a majority of the people don't pay attention, they don't get involved, they don't vote, that's when the entire system collapses and you wind up with a much lesser form of government.
Well, talking to George Barna today, he's an award-winning author of more than 50 books, including bestsellers such as Revolution, The Power of Vision, The Frog in the Kettle, and Transforming Children into Spiritual Champions. And his newest book, America at the Crossroads, Explosive Trends Shaping America's Future and What You Can Do About It. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about those polls that seem to dictate media stories, and also what we can do about not only getting to the polls or getting to the voting stations, but also what we can do to change those trends that are happening in our world today.
Welcome back.
back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm talking to George Barna today, of course. He's the founder of the Barna Group, a leading research firm that specializes in faith-related surveys, and author of the most recent book is called America at the Crossroads. George, of course, you are familiar with how to conduct a survey, how to conduct a poll. How do we make our way and navigate through this barrage of polls that we're told about every day of who's thinking what, and how do we know that they are reliable?
Well, there are a number of things you can look at. Certainly one is the track record of the organization that's doing the polling. A second thing, and it's a little more difficult, is to take a look at how they're conducting their surveys. You can look at things like the sample size, the nature of the people that they interviewed. Was it truly a representative sample of the population? In a political poll, you want to look at how do they filter who they're talking to? Are we talking about all adults? Are we talking about registered voters? Are we talking about likely voters? And in that case, each firm has its own unique formula for trying to identify in advance who are the people who are actually going to vote on election day. And so that can skew results. And then you also want to look a little bit at the question wording. I mean, over the last few days, I've been writing some articles for places, and I looked at some of the polling that's being done nationally. And to be honest, I mean, I've been kind of surprised and disappointed by some of the questions that are being asked. Now, those questions aren't the focus of any of the news stories that go out using the data from those surveys. But when you look at the questions, you can't help but think, well, yeah, of course they came up with those numbers. Look at how they asked the question. You know, when you talk about imposing something on somebody, well, that skews people's likely answers rather than trying to use a more neutral kind of term to get that concept across. So, you know, I just caution people about all these polls being thrown about. More and more surveys are being done with non-representative sampling, which means that you really can't project the data to the population overall, and yet the media make no such distinctions when they do their reporting, the mainstream media. So you have to be very careful about what you're digesting in terms of polling.
So don't take everything to heart, or don't let something discourage you from going out and making your vote count. That's what I keep telling people as they want to say, I just don't want to go.
Well, you know, it's a difficult time because most Americans don't experience the brunt of the reality that we have opinions about. How do we know what's really going on? Well, we rely on the media to tell us. Mm. Now, we know from our surveys that most Americans say, oh, you can't really trust the media. They give you skewed information. But what's the alternative? You know, we can't go out and experience everything, so we're relying on others to report it to us. And unfortunately, the media fills that dominant role. So we've got to remember that the mainstream media has been shown to have its own agenda in this election, in cultural transformation matters, in the reporting of faith-related activities and beliefs. So we've got to be very, very careful about who we trust to tell us what's really going on. Mm-hmm. It's easy for us to be misled and therefore to become more discouraged than we ought to be.
Well, George, you make a statement in your book that I underlined and highlighted and put an extra post-it note by that says, America would be better off if its people lived in harmony with the life principles God has provided in the Bible. I think most of our listeners would agree with that statement, except your research is showing that not all people feel that way. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a growing proportion of Americans who would say that, you know, faith and spirituality is all well and good, but it's not for them. One of the fastest growing faith groups, if you will, in America are what are now known as the nuns, not the little Catholic women, but N-O-N-E-S, the people who have no particular faith inclinations whatsoever. And we find with our two younger generations that number is growing very rapidly. So that's changing the whole religious landscape in America. But there's another thing, Joe, I want to point out, too, which is that the antidote to that would be pastors in our churches boldly preaching God's truth from the Bible. And what we know from the recent surveys we've been doing at American Culture and Faith Institute is that more and more conservative Christians are saying, I really need my pastor to teach me how to think biblically about the issues of the day. Now, they're not coming out and saying, I want my pastor to tell me who to vote for. What they're saying is, I don't understand what the Bible teaches about immigration, about taxation, about racism, about any issue that you can name. And so we ask pastors, theologically conservative pastors across the country, you know, what are you going to do about this? And they say, yeah, we know we didn't have very much influence in the midterm elections. We should have more influence now. But they have absolutely no plans to be teaching their people how to think biblically about today's current issues. And that's one of the main reasons we find why so many young people and even middle-aged people are leaving churches. The percentage of unchurched people has risen by more than 60% in the last decade alone. That's an unbelievably, almost an unprecedented change in such a foundational behavior in American society. And why is that happening? Because they don't see that the church is relevant to the kind of decisions and choices they're going to have to make in their life. So, I mean, we really have to put our heads together and think clearly and strategically about what we can do intentionally to help people have an alternative to relying on the media to help us understand what's going on in the world. The Bible ought to be our key text. Churches need to be teaching the Bible so that people can apply it to real life. And right now, that's not happening to the extent it could.
So if we don't turn that around, if churches don't turn that around, if us as evangelical Christians don't turn that around, what will happen to America?
Well, what you're going to find is that more and more people will be looking out for themselves. We're losing this sense of the common good. That expression doesn't even make sense to most people. They've never heard it before. You look at our schools, we're not teaching what it means to be a good citizen. We know that most Americans have never read the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or the Bible, for that matter. And so what's happening is that we are making our choices based on our feelings in the moment. And when you look at other nations around the world that have succumbed to that kind of spontaneous, random decision-making that has no bond to any kind of a deeper philosophy of life or worldview, such as you might get from the scriptures, then what you wind up with is a nation that is in moral anarchy, a nation that winds up with political chaos, and you're going to wind up having things like dictatorships or parties that run things with a very strong hand, with the militia, you know, the army, the military backing them. I mean, it's not a good prognosis. So we need to think carefully about the freedoms that we have, how we got them, what they mean, what it takes to retain those, and what it means for each of us to be a good citizen if we want the historical version of America to remain in place.
Well, those are some grim thoughts, but can be encouraging at the same time, that we can turn this around to maybe implement more of our biblical worldview on those everyday choices, decisions, and even what our kids are learning in our schools. We'll talk more about that with George Barnum when we come back in his book, America at the Crossroads, Explosive Trends Shaping America's Future and What You Can Do About It. We do have a couple of copies to give away. If you're interested in getting your hands on one of those, please give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Every time I hear that song, I'm like, I need to do something. I am being lazy. Well, we've been talking today just about some alarming trends that are happening in our nation today and what they tell us about America's future. I'm talking to George Barna today. He's the author of America at the Crossroads, Explosive Trends Shaping America's Future and What You Can Do About It. George, you've kind of laid out that we are trending toward maybe this non-biblical worldview trend of America, and also this place where we don't necessarily trust what's happening in government. But there are ways that we can help to turn these trends around, even just one person, aren't there?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is relatively easy in the big picture of things to do is to simply get involved in the political process. Now, voting is critically important, but there's so much more that you can do. One of the things we found in our research is that so many Christians do not talk to other people about what they believe about the issues because they don't want to get in an argument, they don't want to offend people, they feel like they don't really know enough to engage in that kind of a discussion. But it's critical that we be part of that process. So if you feel like you don't know enough, study up. You know, get into God's Word, get into the issues themselves, try to understand that. You know, it's not brain surgery. We can all do this. So, you know, getting involved in the process is one thing. A second thing is to be very well informed about who you're going to vote for, what they represent, and how they're likely to behave. And so we're looking for those strong visionary leaders. And maybe, perhaps, even in the election we're facing now, the kind of leaders that we'd want to back aren't there. We still need to participate in the process. And then maybe after this election is done, maybe we become more aggressive about encouraging leaders who we really believe in to be more involved in the process, to step it up, to take a higher position in government. And so that's something else that we can do. Thirdly, I'd say working with our children is perhaps the most important long-term strategy we can have for how we can affect the world. We pass on our greatest legacy to and through our children. And so intentionally raising them to be spiritual champions, to be good citizens, to be, you know, terrific employees, to be everything that God calls us to be, is such a critical function for us as parents to play. And in that process, also passing on to them and reinforcing when they have a biblical worldview. That's critical. Everybody's got a worldview. Very few people have a biblical worldview. And so how can we turn that around? We do it through our children. Our worldview starts developing at about the age of 18 months, varies slightly with each child, but somewhere in that range is when they start to develop their worldview. By the time they graduate from high school, that worldview is well formed. By the time they graduate from college, they actually become an evangelist for their worldview. So we can't wait until they're after college and in a job and having a family. Too late at that point, they're already pushing their worldview out into the world. So that's a critically important element. And then also I'd say, you know, maybe as a final consideration, is to think about how God wants to transform you as an individual. You know, we can just play it safe and, you know, be like a ping pong ball that just gets hit about and bouncing off things, but that's not the way God intended us. He really has a vision for our lives. And if we can identify what that vision is and pursue that, we're going to understand that part of that is having a total reliance upon Him. And to get there, we're going to have to be broken of sin, self, and society. Embracing brokenness, I would say, is the missing link in the Christian church in America today. We reject brokenness. We don't accept it. Yet the Scriptures talk about how important it is that we be broken of sin, self, and society. And so I think if we were to embrace those kinds of things, Joe, we could really become a very different kind of force in our culture, and we'd see a different kind of movement rise up that's not so selfish, that's not independent, but one that really does want to love other people into the best situation they can have in their life, and we can play a critical role within that.
You know, I love what you wrote about this concept of change versus transformation, being similar to that aspect of salvation versus sanctification, to use fancier words, but it's really just change versus transformation. And we don't really grasp that today. We seem to think the change is the end goal, but it's really not, is it?
Well, it's not, because change is something that can happen quickly. It doesn't take much of an investment. And most importantly, it can be reversed with the snap of a finger. So, you know, we've got to look, I think, more so to what is God calling us to? He doesn't call us to change. He calls us to be transformed. And so understanding that transformation is something that really takes a lot of effort. It takes a very deep commitment of time and energy and thought and resources. But the end product of transformation makes us unrecognizable compared to where we came from. With change, I mean, it's like, you know, shifting the color of your shirt. It's like, yeah, okay, I changed it. Who cares? What difference does it make? Transformation makes all the difference in the world. So if we can go back to his word and see what Jesus was teaching about how that process of transformation works, I think we'll see some remarkable things and hopefully be willing to make a more deep, devout commitment to that very process.
It is interesting having conversations with teenagers or young adults, and I will hear this all the time. People will say, I'm afraid to have that conversation because I don't feel like I know enough. I'm afraid to have that conversation about my faith because I don't feel like I can defend it. How do you offer encouragement to those people?
Well, I think there's probably a two-pronged strategy there. One is, if you think you don't know enough, well, then get what you need. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's out there. God's not hiding any of his truths or key principles from us. They're all right there for the asking. He wants us to have those things. That's why we have it in written form. But secondly is to recognize that at the same time that we're trying to grow personally so that we feel more confident and more informed about those kinds of issues, recognize that nobody's got it all together. I mean, everybody's on a journey. Nobody's figured it all out. And so I think it's really good when we're interacting with people for them to see, you know what, look, I'm not telling you that I've got it totally together. I haven't got it all figured out. But there are some things that have become clear to me. And this is what they are. This is what they look like. This is why they affect the way that I live, the way they do. And I'd like you simply to consider those things. I don't want to impose anything on you. That's not going to work. But, boy, wouldn't it be great to be able to continue this conversation, maybe even to work together as we both move forward on our journey, that we could share with each other what we're experiencing and what we think it means and how I can grow from what you're learning, how you can grow from what I'm learning. And together, we can become spiritually more mature. And the more spiritually mature we become, the better people we become, the better citizens we are, the better employees we are, the better friends we are, the better spouse we are. All of those things get lifted up as we become more spiritually mature. So, well, let's dive into this together. Neither one of us is going to wind up being perfect, but we can wind up being better if we're committed to the process.
Well, George Barna, thanks so much for joining us today. You've just given us so much to think about. George's book is called America at the Crossroads, Explosive Trends, Shaping America's Future, and What You Can Do About It. Good luck with this book, George, and of course with all of the valuable research you do for all of us.
Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too.
Here in this moment, we find a mercy that's renewed. Our fears we surrender.
Now, wait a minute. I'm talking about America. Sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to shining sea.
I remember singing that from pretty much kindergarten through sixth grade every year in the choir concert.
Did you talk like Ray Charles in the middle of it?
The
conductor might have been a little taken aback if he said, now wait a minute.
It was a little more straightforward, the version that we sang. Interesting stuff, though, heard from George Barna. It was such a great read. If you have a chance to pick up that book, I highly recommend it, America at the Crossroads.
Yeah, it's very timely, as you said. And boy, I just am encouraged to continue and challenged, really, to continue to be authentic in my faith when I'm especially meeting new people. For me, I think that's probably the most difficult. And, you know, you don't want to just say, hi, I'm Ted, I'm a Christian. But,
right.
But you know, just not hiding it and not being ashamed of it. And for us, it's kind of easy because, well, what do?
Right.
I work at KTAS Faith Radio, you know, and just that opens the door for conversation a bit there.
Right.
And I just kind of, you know, see if they want to talk more about that or not. And if they have questions, ask questions. And
right.
Sometimes it leads to deeper conversations. But
sometimes
just being open to the Spirit's leading, I think, and being able to engage is key.
Well, and not being afraid to say, well, what questions do you have?
Yeah, exactly.
And then just like George said, if you don't have the answer, that's okay. All you have to do is say, I don't understand that fully, but a little humility probably makes way for a great conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to know all of the answers in order to continue that conversation on another day.
Right.
Great point.
And just to know that, you know, we don't have all the answers, but God does, and he doesn't hide his truth from us. And I was really encouraged to just be reminded that we can be a part of reshaping the culture. And, you know, the mainstream media has an agenda. The government has an agenda. But, you know, Jesus Christ also has an agenda. And we are to carry that out here on earth. So that was just a great reminder for me.
And to make sure that we are informed. He said, well, if you don't know something, go find it out. If you didn't know how to change a tire, you would figure out how to change the tire. And it has to be the same for what we believe to be true about God. In fact, I talked about that last week, that book, Know Why You Believe What You Believe. And
and
I feel really strongly about that, that we should know why we believe what we do and why we're going to vote the way that we do. What is it about each candidate that makes us either want to vote for them or not vote for them? Just like George was suggesting, be as informed as you can. And then if you don't have the answer to a question that someone asks, then let them know. Maybe you'll go find it.
It's easier said than done, I think. I mean, I agree with you. I think we should do it. I'm just being honest here for myself. Sometimes I'd rather just decompress and recharge and watch something on TV, you know? I mean, that's just the honest truth sometimes. But it is true, and I have to come back to that and go, you know what? I should take the time to check this out and to get informed on this topic to really flesh out my beliefs and have some answers for people if they ask.
It kind of gives you more respect now when you listen to people in a debate, for example, that they're able to be well-versed in a variety of topics.
Yeah, very true.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have more sympathy then on Sunday night
for
each of the candidates as they try to answer all of those town hall questions that are going to be fired at them.
Oh, boy, that's this Sunday again, isn't it? Another round, huh?
It is.
Round two. Okay.
Round two is coming our way. Well, just some great, great information from George Barna today. You know, we also had Neil listen to a campus ministry leader, Bill Bright, and he's talking about what does that mean to be the light of Christ? When someone says that, what does it mean and how can we be that light?
You know, Jesus said we're to be salt and light, and they're not the same thing. Salt's a preservative. Salt tries to slow down decay. It's trying to stop decay. Light doesn't try to stop anything. When light comes on the scene, everything reacts to light. Out of that concept, I developed what I call the three R's of social change: roll over, react, or reframe. You know, in any situation, we can either, one, roll over. It's what I call the ostrich syndrome. We stick our head in the sand, hope it goes away. Some things won't go away, though. The other one is we can react. And frankly, I've seen in the church, we spend most of our time reacting to cultural symptoms. We're playing whack-a-mole with all these symptoms out there, trying to knock them back down into place. And there's a place for defense. Jesus said we're to be salt, but he modeled 90% light and 10% salt. Sometimes we do 90% salt and 10% light, and I think we need to get it back in balance. It's okay to say no, but if that's our primary strategy, that is saying no, that is defense. How many football games are won by a great defense? The only one I've seen in the last decade is the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl, but that's the exception. Rarely do you win with a great defense. You have to have a great offense, and that's why Jesus said we're to be light. We're to be the ones driving the message of the gospel. You know, it's like this. In any case, when someone says, Brad, I'm offended you prayed in the name of Jesus, I say, well, I'm kind of offended you try to censor the content of my speech, but the real question here is, what do you have against Jesus? What have I just done? I've changed the conversation. The entire playing field of the conversation is now changed from my speech to who is Jesus, why does it matter, what do you have against Jesus? No one wants to say what they have against Jesus. They'll say, I don't have anything against Jesus. Well, apparently you do because you don't want me to pray in his name. I want the conversation to be about Jesus, not about the symptom. I don't want to be reactive. In the past I would have said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. I didn't try to justify myself. I don't do that anymore. I don't apologize for something that I shouldn't need to apologize for. Praying in the name of Jesus is nothing I'm going to be reticent about or apologetic about. I'm going to do that because my agenda, I want to push it forward. Jesus always had an agenda. He was always on offense. There were two or three times in all the Gospels I saw where he went defensive, like when he cleared the temple. But even then, he went on to offense by the end. But, how many times have we heard politicians being interviewed on TV, and they say, that's a good question, but I think the real issue is, doesn't that annoy you?
Yes.
But Jesus did it all the time. You realize Jesus did it all the time. It's what he modeled for us.
And one of the things that Jesus also teaches us is just to be in prayer. He was in prayer himself. He taught his disciples how to pray. Of course, we all learned how to pray from that as well. And prayer is such a very powerful influence in someone's life.
Yeah, and not be afraid to, mm-hmm. to say the name of Jesus like he's talking about. I really appreciate his approach. So good.
I do too. I'll try to be especially bold. Well, there's another individual, Ginger Sanders' mom, who was praying for her husband and, her husband-to-be for her daughter.
When Ginger Sanders' mom faithfully prayed for her police officer husband, she had no idea that her daughter would also marry a police officer. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Ginger tells us what she learned.
Oftentimes, when we saw my dad leave or hear of things on the news or radio, I would see my mother get down on her knees and pray. So she set the example. I had a praying mother.
Ginger and her husband now serve as law enforcement chaplains.
My husband knows how to relate to those law enforcement officers, and they have become some of our best friends. And we have been called to pray with some that are having marital problems. And it is hard. But now, as I look back, God was preparing us to do what we're doing now and to be with those spouses and to be with those loved ones that are having hard times.
God can use your prayers and your life experiences to make a difference in people's lives. For more ideas, go to makingyourlifecount.com.
Such a great way to make your life count, to be in prayer for people. Well, we, of course, encourage you to do that as well, and also to be praying for our ministry partners. Compassion International is one of them. That is for, I'm sure you've heard of Compassion. We talk about them a lot here at Faith Radio. If you would like to support people who need support, at least one third of the world's children live in extreme poverty. Many are undernourished. They can't go to school. They're unhealthy, and you can change that by becoming a Compassion sponsor. You can provide love and hope and protection, as well as some money each month to help keep them safe. If you're interested in that, you can go to myfaithradio.com, and you can just click on our button there for Compassion International.
Yeah, physical needs are met through this ministry as well as spiritual needs. A lot of kids are Christians today, a lot of young people, because they were a Compassion child. They heard about Jesus. They accepted him as Savior, and now they're doing great things for God. Some of them work for the ministry. Mm-hmm. I have some friends that are connected to it and have gone and actually met their sponsored child. An incredible experience, unlike any other. So perhaps that opportunity could be there for you, too, if you go today to myfaithradio.com and just click on the main link. It's on our main page. Just $38 a month, change the life of a child and introduce them to the Lord, perhaps.
And you can pick two also.
Yeah, that's right. More than
one. Or
three. Yeah, as many as you want.
Mm-hmm.
All there.
Lots of opportunities. Well, if you're listening to our show today, but you really just caught a snippet and you'd like to go hear the whole thing, you can go back to myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith. You could list all of the shows, of course, that Neil and I have done, not only in recent history, but it goes way back. So you can listen to a lot of shows from Connecting Faith, but also any of the programs that we air here on Faith Radio. Another great way to listen to any of the programming is to have the Faith Radio app. It's so easy, and you can just put it right on your phone. Click on it. You can listen live. You can live stream any of the content that's happening right now. Otherwise, you can go back and listen to podcasts as well.
That's right, and you can share content. Also, maybe you know a friend or a family member that is struggling with a certain issue. Could be financial difficulties, could be relationship struggles, whatever. You can search for that keyword in our search bar, and a lot of the interviews that we've done over the years that you mentioned will come up there. So you can go and share that link with a friend that could really benefit from them and from that, rather, and just be encouraged in their walk with the Lord, too, in that. So it's all available.
Yep, a really easy way to just share the good news of Christ with someone who needs to hear it. Also, just the practical living aspect of the programs that we do here on Connecting Faith. A lot of those can be helpful to someone you know, maybe to yourself, your spouse, your children. And so we want to be a partner with you in that way. You can just go to myfaithradio.com and find the podcast there.
And if you're a new listener right now, maybe you just discovered Faith Radio, well, welcome. We have a free gift we want to send you. You can sign up for that also at myfaithradio.com. We send out a free welcome packet just to help familiarize yourself with the station and what we're all about. So go to myfaithradio.com on the main banner. I think it's the second click over. You'll see the compassion link there. Maybe third click over. Then you'll see the welcome packet there. Sign up for that for free. We'll send it out to you right away.
And thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith today. I'm Joe Bender, along with Ted Ross and Carissa Rogers. We are all here listening for you. Oh, Ted has one more thing
just
he really wants
let,
to say.
Let people know that Monday is going to be a really good show, too. It's coming up. Every Season Prayers, Gospel-Centered Prayers for the Whole of Life. This is a book by a person named Scotty Smith, and Neil's going to have a conversation with him about going deeper in our prayer life. Sometimes you don't even know what to say or how to say it in prayer. It's going to be a good discussion. So join us at the same time Monday for Connecting Faith.
Have a great day.